This is Slovenian,
Croatian.
Oh, okay. I guess. What does it say? Arjuna Gubi sponsor. Huh? It loses the ability to make decisions, yes. And the other one is frustration. He becomes very frustrated. So here's Arjuna's position. He's making a decision based on false compassion, and he gets frustrated and he can't decide what to do. So finally he surrenders to Krishna. You can take that off there and put it up. You can actually, there's a reason why the hair, I'll show you.
Yes, like a ruler. That's it.
Voila. And then another point which comes up in this first section is finer sentiments. Finer sentiments can mean many things. Arjuna is accused of false compassion. What are some other subtle sentiments that we all experience? They're good, feelings, but they're just fine, they're subtle. Compassion is one. What are some others? How about love? Yeah? Love, okay. Love. What else?
Anger.
Mercy. Anger, there you go, the opposite of love. Let me tell you, it's about something. It's, people live in the material world. My parents did this for about 30 years. It's what they call, I don't know, how many of you have had parents or relatives who have been, or you've been involved in one way or another in a divorce or a broken family? About 95% of us. Anyway, you're pretty lucky, and the rest, it goes up to 60-65%. But my parents had what they call, well, it's not really anger, there's something else here, a fine sentiment. It's not exactly a good one, but hate, right? They had a love-hate relationship. Guess when they hated each other? Huh? Okay, but when? What time during the day did they hate each other?
Daylight.
All day long.
Daylight.
And what time of the day did they love each other?
At night.
All night long. They couldn't stand each other, basically, but they were so bound by sex. And they call it's traditionally called love-hate relationship. Anyway, these are different emotions and sentiments that we have. Now, Arjuna was guilty of compassion, which is basically compassion, love. How about some other good ones here? Yeah.
Respect.
Respect, aha, that's a good one. What else? Any others?
Tolerance.
Huh?
Tolerance.
Tolerance, okay. Behind you there's someone with his hand up. What was yours, sir? I'm looking at you with the eyes in the back of my head here.
Consideration for the family.
Huh?
Consideration for the family, for the maintenance of the family.
Consideration for the family, yes. Actually, I've kind of run out of space. But these are good. Now, what we have here is a really good guy. Arjuna's a nice guy. He's the best guy on the block, you know. He's got a lot of good compassion. He's not a, he's righteous, he's religious, he's wealthy, he's handsome, he's got it all. But all of his
good sentiments are used in the wrong way. He's compassionate, but for the wrong thing.
Therefore, Krishna chastises him. Why don't we put that one? Another thing that's brought out in this first section, and this is also very, very important. The Bhagavad Gita means the song of God, right? You've heard that? Everybody heard that? Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. But there's something a little more to this word God. Actually, the Sanskrit word used is Bhagavan. So, sometimes people criticize that Krishna, this is amazing, Krishna is not, the word Krishna is not really used that much in the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, in most places, although Krishna does come up in a few key places. But what is the meaning? Who is this guy Krishna? Is he the leader of the Vrishnis? Is he a cowherd boy? Is he a good lover, you know, with 16,000 girlfriends? Who really is Krishna that he's got the nerve to tell us how to live our lives? You know, he wants us to bow down and surrender to him. Who is he? What does Bhagavan mean? Huh? Full of opulence. Yes. Aishwaryasya Samagrasya. He's full of all Aishwarya, full of all opulences. Shanam Bhaga Itingana. Shanam. There are six of them. What are these six opulences? Who can say? Number one is? What? Anything. Knowledge? Okay, he has all knowledge. What else?
Power.
Okay, let's give the Sanskrit. Knowledge. Is that the right way to spell knowledge, or is there a D in there? This is a D. I always forget that D. Obviously, I don't have all knowledge. Okay, power. What's that called in Sanskrit?
Shakti.
Huh? Shakti? No. Virya, yes. Virya, yes. That's one of my... I pick up on sounds, and especially in, like, Prabhupada in Bengali, you know, he would say Kshatriya instead of Kshatriya. Bengali pronunciation of Sanskrit is a little bit different than classical Sanskrit. So if you hear a Bengali, they really are into the shuds. There's three S's. Sa, sha, shra. You picked up the difference, right? It's just a difference in flicking your tongue in your mouth. Once the tongue is flicked against the roof of the mouth, sha, and when it's against the teeth, sa, sa, sha, sha. Okay. So this verse, I love it. You hear? I sure yes, Sharmagya Virya. Okay, what's another one? Huh? Music? Beauty. You can have fun with deaf people. Okay. Yeah, Krishna is the most beautiful, the source of all beauty. Krishna is so beautiful that when Krishna looked at himself in a mirror, he was stunned. Wow, I'm beautiful. Okay, what else? Four.
What's the word?
Glory.
Yuck. young. Okay. Ever youthful. Let's see. I just write this one. Knowledge, beauty, power, strength, wealth. No, that's not it. What else? Wealth. Okay. Wealth. What else?
Snoring?
Glories. No, I mean, these are his glories, but that's not one of his glories. But he has glories. Huh? Fame, okay. He's famous in all the three worlds. Everybody knows about God, right? And six, renunciation. He's more renounced than Clint Eastwood, right? Okay. Renunciation. You can put this one up.
Here, I'll show you.
No.
Professional.
Okay. What's another meaning for Bhagavan? Big body?
Nobody's
equal. Supreme Personality of God. Well, yes, that's true. Although Bhagavan is sometimes used to describe Shiva and even other demigods, but there's two syllables, two syllables, Bhaga and Van. What does that mean? Huh? Most powerful person. Actually, it means one who possesses all bhagas. These opulences are described as bhagas, so he's Bhagavan. So this is established right in the very first verse, second verse of the second chapter, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Kutas Tvakashmalamidam. It's not just any ordinary person that's speaking to Arjuna. It's the person with full knowledge. You can put your faith in him. You can learn from him. You don't have to speculate. He knows everything, everywhere, because everything is within him. Everything is created by him. He knows what's going on at every moment in every corner of his creation. He is the Supreme, and he even says it about himself. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante man buddha bhava samandita. I am the source of everything. Nobody says that. Jesus doesn't say it. Muhammad doesn't say it. Nobody else says it in any other scripture. But Krishna even says, and so many others, Asita, Devala, Narada, so many great rishis. In the Mahabharata, you find all these big rishis were coming to the Kauravas, to Dhritarashtra. They were even telling the Pandavas, Krishna is the source, he's the origin, he's the fountainhead of everything. Akila Rasamrita Murti. And then Pandavas accepted it, whereas the Kauravas couldn't. Therefore, they were demons. Okay, I think I'm going to stop there. This is the first section. Tomorrow we're going to try and, let's see. We've done today 1 to 10, more or less, or 1 to 9. So your homework, I'm sure by mental telepathy, you all picked up the homework that I gave you yesterday, because I didn't announce it. And that was to read this first section. So your homework for tomorrow will be to read the next section. Read verses 11 through 30. We're going to try and complete 11 through 40, but 31 to 38, rather, were fairly easy. But we're going to talk about jnana, knowledge. Krishna's going to describe his understanding, not his understanding, the understanding of the soul. He's going to describe to Arjuna what the soul is. He's chastised Arjuna for having a bodily conception of life and for lamenting for the body, and now he's going to describe the nature of the soul. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Including his own material mind and intelligence, then he will decide to take full shelter, then he'll be a candidate to take full shelter of a spiritual authority. I think that's really a truism. You don't know what truism is, do you? A true statement. A truism is a true statement. That if your glass is full of ink and somebody comes along with some nice milk, well, you'll have to drink from the bottle because your glass is full of ink. You have to empty the ink out. Then when your glass is empty, then you can put nice milk in it. Unless you're actually feeling that you do not know the answers. And don't worry that you don't know. It's kind of a... Everybody in the world is in darkness. Believe me. You go all around the world to any different country, and I've been in them all, from China to Russia to America, everywhere I've been. And basically, people are in the same consciousness, and they play games with one another. They bluff that I know what's happening, I know what's going on, I've got the answers. Nobody wants to admit that I'm ignorant. But the fact is that truly learned men in this world do admit that they don't know. In fact, probably the most outspoken Brahmins of today or gurus of society, the scientists, well, the father of modern science, Isaac Newton, said that he felt like he was a child playing with sand at the seashore in Dubrovnik. You don't get nice seashore here in Pula, but down in Dubrovnik you get nice beaches down there. So Newton said, I feel like I'm like a little child playing with sand in comparison to the vast ocean of knowledge to be known that I don't know. And of course there are many other famous personalities in history who have acknowledged that they don't know. So in spiritual life also, we have to come to this conclusion that I don't know and I need help, and that's what Arjuna did. An interesting thing in verse 10, after yesterday we covered verses 1 through 9. So in verse 10, Lord Krishna, he has heard from Arjuna. Arjuna has said, Govinda, I shall not fight. And then Krishna turns to him and starts to speak, but he's smiling. Now, formerly they were friends, But now Arjuna has changed their relationship. Sishyaste ham shadi mam pram prapanam. I accept you as my guru. I want to inquire from you as a disciple. This is a totally different mood than having a little discussion with a group of friends. You cannot learn much by having a discussion with a group of friends who are also competing with you. Oftentimes you'll find in a group of friends there are ego battles going on. You know, someone will state something and someone else will try to state something that's more clever than what the other person said. There's some ego battles going on. But when you come to accept someone as your spiritual master, it's no longer a competition to show off your knowledge. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approached his spiritual master, obviously Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very learned. In fact, it was hard to have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a disciple. First of all, he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but aside from that, apart from that, he was Nimai Pandit. He was practically the greatest scholar in India at the time. He was the greatest scholar because he had established that. He had defeated Kashmiri Pandit. I think you've all heard that name, that story of Keshav Kashmiri. What happened was that in India at that time, Kashmiri Pandit, what happened was that people, their entertainment was much more spiritual. And for example, in villages, people would get together in the evening and they would see a drama or a performance of Mahabharata or Ramayana. They would have someone who would tell stories about different sages and stories from the Puranas, etc. So what they would also do is they would have what were known as Digvijay Pandits. Keshav Kashmiri was a Digvijay. Digvijay, of course, Vijay means victory. I don't really know what Dig means, but Digvijay Pandit. These pundits would go around India and they would challenge other pundits to a competition. And the whole village would gather and they would debate in Sanskrit. For example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met this Keshav Kashmiri who had defeated all the other scholars in India. At that time, in Bengal, Navadvip was known as the Oxford of India, the Cambridge of India. There were many big scholars and pundits there. This Keshav Kashmiri had gone all over India and defeated all the other pundits, and now he had come to Navadvip, and the big pundits of Navadvip were afraid of him. But there was this young boy, Nimai, 16 years old youth, and he was very learned, very scholarly. He hadn't been really tested, but he was scholarly, and the pundits knew that. So instead of facing directly Keshav Kashmiri, they devised a strategy. First, we'll put this young boy against him. And if the boy defeats him, it'll be a huge victory for us. And if he defeats the boy, that'll give us enough time to leave town for somebody's wedding or something. It'll be enough time for us to avoid having to have a direct conflict. They were really afraid of Keshav Kashmiri, and they would have lost their prestige. So, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met him,
case of Kashmiri, when asked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, immediately on the spot, composed just from his mind 100 shlokas in pure Sanskrit in praise of Mother Ganges. I mean, it was awe-inspiring that someone could just like that compose one after the other of 100 beautiful verses in perfect Sanskrit in praise of the Ganges. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the pundit was actually quite proud of himself. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that's very nice, it's very beautiful. I was just wondering about those mistakes that you made. And Keshav Kashmiri was shocked. First of all, he was a little bit insulted that this young boy could suggest that he had made mistakes. So he said, what mistakes? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right from memory, repeated all the verses. I mean, the man composed one after the other. He didn't have a flip chart. He didn't know about flip charts. So there was nothing written down, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remembered all of them, and then he picked out the verses where there was some alliteration, where there was some sentences where he, Bhavani Bartu, the words didn't, they were duplicating the same thing. Bhavani means the wife of Lord Shiva, and Bartu means the husband. So to say Bhavani Bartu in the same sentence was incorrect. And in that way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found out some other mistakes, and the pundit was completely mortified. Got that one? Okay. He was destroyed. His ego was hurt, and he prayed to Saraswati that, what happened? You know, you're supposed to give me knowledge. He worshipped the goddess of learning, Saraswati, and then she revealed to him that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the supreme personality of Godhead, so no wonder you were defeated. And the pundit left town. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Prakashananda Saraswati that when I went before my guru found me to be a fool. Okay, here's the most brilliant man on the planet, just as if you call him a man. Plus, he's the source of all knowledge. And in other words, he's Bhagavan. This is, we discussed this yesterday, Bhagavan. What did we say? What's the other, the basic meaning of Bhagavan? We discussed that. Who remembers? There are two syllables. Yeah, but how, what are the two syllables? Bhaga, Bhagavan. Bhagavan. Bhaga means opulences, and we listed the opulences, and van means one who possesses. So the very first one is knowledge. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Bhagavan. So it's no wonder that the Kashmiri was defeated. But then for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru to say that he was a fool, that's quite amazing. But there's a principle being taught. And that principle is that no matter how intelligent you are, you should always think of yourself as a fool in front of your spiritual master. Now, there are obvious cases. For example, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was his spiritual master? Put your hand up. It'll be easier for me to answer questions if you put your hand up. Who was the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Gorkhashore Das Babaji. Now, what do we know about Gorkhashore Das Babaji? Did he have a master's degree, or did he finally pass that PhD, or, you know, what was his situation, Mataji? You shook your head. He didn't know how to write his name. He was practically, by material consideration, he was illiterate. He couldn't read or write. Now here's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was known as a walking encyclopedia. You know, he was a Shrutidhar. But he took initiation from a man who was illiterate, couldn't read or write. So in that mood, Bhaktisiddhanta always considered himself a fool before his spiritual master, and he followed Gorkhashore till Gorkhashore left the planet. Bhaktisiddhanta did not immediately start his preaching mission. Who knows what he did? What did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur do? Loudly. Chanting, yes, he chanted, yes. A little more elaborate description. He would take a handful of rice and soak it in a skull, an old skull of some dead animal. Actually, I think it was a cow, dead cow or whatever. So he would gather some water in that and some rice and soak it overnight and then throw it on the floor and eat it like that. That's only 100 years ago. It's not like we're talking about, you know, thousands of years ago, Vishwamitra and this one and that one. This is only in the last century, in the early 1900s, Bhaktisiddhanta did this. And he wasn't from a poor family. Bhaktivinoda was from a very wealthy family. So he performed that austerity, and he lived in Mayapur until the time his spiritual master left his body. He didn't think, you know, I've got to go out and immediately start my mission, but he followed his guru. So he kept himself in that way almost. He was preaching, but he was practically unknown to the people of Calcutta. And that's when Kunja Babu, or Tirtha, who ultimately became Tirtha Maharaj, came to Mayapur, met Bhaktisiddhanta, was impressed by his knowledge, and offered to set up programs for him in Calcutta. But the point is here, again, to get back to it, that the spiritual master, the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple is one of servant and master. And Krishna's smiling. He's slightly smiling that Arjuna has now approached him and revealed his mind. The spiritual master should be someone that you have enough confidence in. And we've been talking about different reasons why to accept a spiritual master. Sentiment plays a much lesser part. We should actually be able to develop a relationship with our spiritual master and be prepared to open our minds and our hearts to him and receive spiritual solutions to material problems. This is interesting. This is another point about preaching and what some people have perceived as our tradition and what actually is the fact. May not be known to many of you, but Sanatan Goswami in particular, he's mentioned, but other of the Goswamis, it's true that they performed a lot of austerity, that they remained in Vrindavan, that they chanted, they did their bhajan, they discussed satsang, but they also went out into the villages around Vrindavan and they met with householder devotees, and they inquired after their welfare. They were concerned about their problems, and they would always give spiritual solutions from the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam or from practical spiritual morality, logic, common sense, etc. People may have liked or not liked their answers. Sometimes we find that, you know, if someone's got a problem and you tell them, chant Hare Krishna, they've got this kind of thing that, no, you don't understand, my problem's special and I need some really technical, you know, material type of instruction and formula, etc. I guess that's there because there was a famous book written in the 1960s by one of the most famous beatniks in the world. What was his name? I can't remember his name. Kerouac? Was it Jack Kerouac? Maybe it was him. Yeah, it was Jack Kerouac. Everybody heard of Jack Kerouac? Okay. You heard of him? On the Road. Now, this one was called Been Down So Long, It Looks Like Up to Me. In other words, I've been down, I've been low, that you get so used to that you think that's what reality is, that's what life is about. And we've been in the material world for so long, we can't imagine that there are some basic, simple solutions that if we just pursue, that all of our material problems will go away. We can't conceive of it, and we have a hard time accepting it. The beginning is faith, and we have to have faith because we're not in knowledge. So anyway, the Sanatan group, they would do this, and they were very dira dira jana priyo. We know that we've heard often that they were very priya, they were very dear to the ruffians, the adhira. But they were also very dear to the common people because they would work with them, they would be with them, they would show their feelings. So Krishna smiles, and then Krishna begins to chastise Arjuna. He's his disciple now, and this brings us to the second theme, the theme of the second section. The second theme is that the spirit soul is eternal and indestructible, while material nature is temporary. Because of this, one should not be bewildered by the inevitable destruction of the material body. This was Arjuna's big problem. He was lamenting for the body, but the body is inevitably going to be destroyed. On the day you're born, you get a birth certificate, and they should just as easily give you a death certificate. Might as well give you a death certificate. Everybody gets a birth certificate. You might as well get a death certificate because you're going to die today, tomorrow. They can just leave the date blank. But Arjuna wasn't considering that. Rather, one should remain fixed in prescribed duties. We're going to discuss prescribed duties and the importance of prescribed duties in pacifying the mind, working in devotion. It's very, very therapeutic. While the process of Krishna consciousness is acting within you, while the medicine is working, what are you going to do? Because it's a gradual, slow process. So prescribed duties are purifying, and we'll discuss that. They purify us and allow one to realize the eternal self. So that's the basic theme of this second section in verses 11 through 30. How many of you, by the way, read the Bhagavad Gita? How many did your homework? I'm your teacher, see? I want to know how many did your homework. I put up your hand. How many read the Bhagavad Gita overnight? I'm impressed. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I'm impressed. I'll give you some more homework tonight, give you another chance. If you don't do your homework on even one of the days, then you fail the course, and I'll get you kicked out of your local temple, and I'll get your initiation canceled. And so you better do your homework. So, anyway, Krishna, he's smiling. Arjuna's now his disciple. Got him captured now. The guy's brainwashed. And he begins to chastise him. Srila Prabhupada was a very distinguished, a very aristocratic gentleman. Bengal, in general, has always produced so many learned scholars in India. In modern times, there have been Nobel Prize winners from Bengal, and instead of Marconi, it has now been acknowledged that Jagadish Chandra Bose invented the radio. But anyway, in general, actually the British made Calcutta their main city in India. It was called the jewel in the crown, the British crown, you know, comprising so many countries around the world. But the jewel in the British crown was Calcutta. And it was how many of you have been to Calcutta? It is not exactly a model beautiful city today. That's an understatement. But formerly in British times, it was very, very beautiful. There were many parks and ponds, and the roads were very good, and the organization was very good, and people had good driving licenses, and of course they only drove horse carts, but you're eating, and your swapna, you're sleeping, and your other activities, sex life, everything. If you regulate your life, yoga bhavati dukkha, you can mitigate material misery, forget spiritual advancement. Now, don't take that statement out of context. I said forget spiritual advancement, but it was in a context. You should always remember spiritual advancement. But in this case, aside from spiritual advancement, if you regulate your life, you're going to be happier mentally, you're going to be happier physically, you're going to be more successful in the material world. One of our biggest problems in the Western world is we're totally unregulated. So prescribed duties are important because they help us to get regulated sense gratification. And there's another advantage here that is mentioned. Well, actually there's two. What does regulated sense gratification, what effect does that have on us? Yes, we certainly should gradually come to the mode of goodness, but what does that involve in relationship to our connection with the material world? Detachment, yes. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahoitukam. If you practice Bhakti Yoga, the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga, knowledge will come to you. Gradually, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, Krishna within your heart, will give you knowledge, and you will become detached from the material world. It's a fact that devotees, after a number of years, they literally lose their attraction for many of the things that they did when they were non-devotees and thought they could never do without. It literally happens. You gradually kind of get disinterested. And it's so subtle, the evolution of these feelings, that you may not directly associate it with your practice of devotional service, but Krishna has said that this is what will happen. So you should accept it, that the reason you're becoming more detached is because you're practicing bhakti yoga, and you should not give up that bhakti yoga, because ultimately it will help you to reach the highest stage. So one becomes detached, gradually detached, and the third thing is one comes to the platform of knowledge. So all this Krishna is telling Arjuna. See, I got it right this time. And I put the D in there. I learned something overnight. Knowledge. I always have trouble with that word. I don't know. Any of you ever have trouble with that word? Knowledge? E-D-G-E instead of E-G-E. Prescribed duties. The things that we do every day. And for us, prescribed duties, if you're living in the temple, it means the activities that the temple president or the temple commander and you decide upon will be your duties. Things that you like to do and things that need to be done. Combining those two things. You should be a pujari, you should be a cook, you should be cleaner or a treasurer, whatever. Don't take those activities lightly. You should know that those, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're doing various things, you're reading the books, but those things will take time to go through your whole life, to become your, for you to transform yourself from the gross materialist that you were to the pure devotee that you want to become. You know, there's a lot in between, in the middle there. Time, obstacles, determination, patience. So the things that help you to get through all of that are your regular daily activities. And that's why you should all try to have activities in Krishna consciousness. Because prescribed duties are aimed at pleasing Krishna. You'll have to work anyway, so if you don't get some kind of regulated devotional service, you'll get some kind of material activity, and then your spiritual advancement will be very, very difficult. Okay, unfortunately we weren't able to go. We went over time 1 hour. And still I was not able to go as fast as I wanted to. So tomorrow, as homework, I'd like you to read from verses 31 through 53. Verses 31 through 53, and we'll try and speed it up a little bit. I'd like to get some feedback from you, some honest feedback. How are you perceiving this seminar? Are things clear? How many people feel that what I'm teaching is relatively clear? Yeah? Okay. How many people are feeling that there's too much information being covered? Okay. Okay, good. Mahabahu thinks there's too much. It's growing. Okay. I don't know what that means, but I'm growing, you're growing, we're all growing. For you, okay, okay. We'll have a special session for you. What do they call that? Tutor. You get special tutor training. Only 100 marks an hour. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
I'd like to, first of all, congratulate all of you for sustaining your enthusiasm through all of the healing processes and all of the seminars that you must be attending. This is what you call a heavy dose of medicine. You can just imagine the six dose armies of Vrindavan. They were doing this 366 days a year, 24 hours a day, constantly hearing and chanting glories of the Lord. So it requires stamina. They didn't get their stamina from eating a lot. As you all know, they practically were, for all intents and purposes, fasting. Unless you call eating a little buttermilk every day or two eating. So we're discussing the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. What is this chapter called, by the way? Anyone remember? Yes? Yes. Where did Prabhupada get that name? Does anyone remember? Yes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggested that this was a summary of the whole Bhagavad Gita. So what we're seeing in this chapter is going to be further elaborated by Krishna in the subsequent 16 chapters. So we've broken the second chapter into five parts. The first day, we discussed theme one. Who can remember, without looking at it, what theme one is? Someone? Huh? Knowledge, yeah. Genealogy. No, that wasn't the theme of the first section that we discussed. No one remembers? I mean, I don't have to call your hand, but... Okay. Yes? Right. What happened in that chapter? What very dynamic thing happened in that chapter? There was an example of this. Chaitanya Dasi. Something very dynamic happened. Ante. Yes. Arjuna accepted Krishna as a bona fide spiritual master. And then he revealed his mind. And then Krishna smiled, and then he began to chastise his disciple. The first thing he did was chastise his disciple. So what was in the second theme, second part? Anybody has any ideas? Yes? Okay, yes. But with basically the second section, Arjuna was in illusion, so Krishna gave his instructions on the soul, that the soul is eternal, indestructible, while material nature is temporary. Because of this, one should not be bewildered By the inevitable destruction of the material body, rather one should remain fixed in prescribed duties which purify and allow one to realize the eternal self. So Arjuna's problem was that he was lamenting for something that was not worthy of grief, and Krishna told him that. And in a number of verses, he instructed Arjuna the same basic idea that the body is temporary, the soul is eternal, therefore the wise do not lament the body is going to die. Even Drona will die, Arjuna. Even Bhishma will die. You can't stop it. Now, the Bhagavad Gita is not a book simply to get a degree at college with. Someone wrote a poem once, or a two-line poem, that the Bhagavad Gita is not a book to be kept on the shelf. The Bhagavad Gita is a book by which you learn about the self. In other words, the Bhagavad Gita is not just a religious text when we're feeling a little down, then we take it out and we read a few verses and now I feel better, I can go on with my material activities again. But actually the Bhagavad Gita is meant to be, you have to move over a little bit, I'm going to walk right through you. You obviously haven't been here before. The Bhagavad Gita is something that we really have to... Arjuna's fighting, and that may seem remote to us, but we have to somehow or other compare Arjuna's situation. Why is it that that Krishna chooses to give these very elevated philosophical instructions through a warrior? Why didn't he preach to some Brahmana? Why didn't he give his instructions to a sannyasi? I would have gone, and if he'd have called me. Why did he call a kshatriya? And that also a grihastha with four wives. Arjuna had four wives. Why didn't he give him those instructions? Yes. Maybe. Kshatriya special prescribed duties. Are you getting close now? Yes, Hanuman.
General public can understand.
General public can understand, yes. People follow kshatriyas because they're leaders. That's also true. Well, that's also there. He gave those instructions. Bhaktosi made sakacheti rahasyam hiye tadutamam. Because you're my friend, because you're my devotee, because you're not envious of me. But as an example, Ante.
So that the rest of the people could understand that teachings of Bhagavad Gita are meant for all the people.
Yes, now why? Mahabhu.
Because here it is clearly seen the closeness of death, because kshatriya has to kill.
Yes.
You want to show that spiritual life is activity.
Yes, spiritual life is activity. What I'm looking for is really that, what is the worst thing that one would have to do in life? Is kill some other person. That would be I think murder is the topmost crime in society. If you murder someone, in many countries, in most intelligent countries, The punishment is death penalty. So Krishna is showing that even if you have the most difficult duty to perform to kill someone else, if it is prescribed by the Lord, then you should not hesitate to do that. And of course everything after that is also included. If death, if fighting is included, then you can't make an excuse. In other words, Arjuna can't make an excuse for his not fighting. So we can understand that there's no other situation that we could possibly be in that we could think up an excuse why we should not follow spiritual instructions. Right? Does that make sense? So, the third section now here is verses 31 through 38. How many people read their Bhagavad Gita? Remember, truth is important in Kali Yuga. How many people read the Bhagavad Gita section? Okay. Blessings, blessings, blessings. The rest of you. Okay. So, in the third section, the theme is material happiness comes from proper execution of one's dharma. Neglect of dharma brings material downfall. So I think actually we discussed something here about dharma. Okay, the prescribed duties. All right, I'll just backtrack a little here. We discussed also the four defects that a conditioned soul has, and therefore he has to accept a spiritual authority. Tendency to cheat, imperfect senses, tendency to be an illusion, and the tendency to, what? Make mistakes. We talked about the empirical process of acquiring knowledge and the descending process of acquiring knowledge. I think this is really the crux of our faith. We had quite an interesting discussion about defending our faith. We talked about the soul. What were some of the arguments that we talked about? We discussed about the soul quickly. Yes, one. Neither did I. Louder. Chance it, Bolivia.
Živo biće umre, svi hemijski sastojci su još uvijek prisutni u tijelu, ali je tijelo ipak mrtvo.
Body dies, only chemicals are still there, but body still is dead.
Yes, any other arguments? What were some other ones? Is Jagora here? You're not Jagora. I wanted to see him here today. He's my godbrother. The first time I met him yesterday. Actually, I wanted to bring him up. Did y'all know Jagora? From Germany? How many of you know him? No, he's not. Panetti's disciple, one of the earlier disciples of Srila Prabhupada in Germany. He's Grihastha. He has a little bicycle shop. And he's been executing devotional service very nicely, quite quietly by himself and preaching with some others. He has 9 kids, I think. Well, I think he's the king in ISKCON. I know a few who had 8 kids, but 9, I mean, I take my hat off. But he's also very learned. Okay, he gave some other arguments yesterday. What are some other arguments? Talked about electrons in a cloud chamber, you can't see them. We talked about air, you can't see the air, but you can feel it. We talked about the body stopping functioning. Although all the chemicals are there, it appears that nothing material is missing, but something has left, some ingredient. You hear Prabhupada is really funny in this. He says, why don't you just pump some chemicals back into the body and make it work again? Very simple argument. I love Prabhupada's. His arguments are often very simple, but very deep. They're like a telescope that you can expand or you can contract. You know, it's like you can take it on a very superficial, on a very outer level, or you can go deeper and deeper, like the argument of design, that when you see a flower in an art gallery, you think, who painted this? Common sense. Someone designed it. Someone painted it. But we see a real flower, and we don't think, you know, maybe there's an intelligent person who designed it. When we see a beautiful rose in an art gallery, we think, you know, who's the Van Gogh? Who's the great artist? Or you go to a country and you see that all the cars are driving on the right-hand side of the road or the left-hand side of the road, whatever it is. The street lights come on at night. You know, you see there's order and you naturally think there must be a mayor of the city. You haven't met him. You don't know him. But you automatically, you think, because there's design, there's order here, there must be some intelligence behind it. But when we see the material world, people say, oh, nature, it's nature. So Prabhupada shoots back, who's nature? You can't just throw out a word, nature, and then don't define it. Who's nature? So, for this also, he uses very simple arguments about the existence of the soul and for the difference between the soul and the body. We describe that as knowledge, a knowledge being to know the difference between matter and spirit and the controller of both. You can put it up there. Some more clips. So, Arjuna, in this section, Krishna has defeated his compassion by applying knowledge. Arjuna has got a false sense of compassion for the soul. Compassion is generally a good characteristic of a person. It's a good sentiment. But when it's falsely applied materially, it leads to two things. What did we describe those two things as? False compassion leads to what? There were two bad results of false compassion. Yes? Frustration, yes, very good. Frustration. You'll ultimately get frustrated because the body's going to die. You can have, you know, 10,000 Mother Teresas in the world. And, you know, I'm sure wish there were good people like her. But that's not going to help the condition of society as long as people have got sinful hearts. As long as they're contaminated, as long as they don't have any spiritual knowledge. Then what was another... Yes? Yes, this was Arjuna's position. Kartanya dosho pahata svabhavaha. Now I'm bewildered, Krishna. I don't know why I'm
bewildered. Devotees get bewildered. I think that's one of the biggest, you know, we really want to raise the level of Krishna consciousness in our society. We want to print lots of books, even Goswami literature. Prabhupada encouraged us ultimately to publish Goswami literature. We want to have lots of Krishna katha discussions, Krishna lila, etc. But personally, I find, actually Prabhupada said this to us, he said, I'm just waiting for the day when I can talk to some of my disciples about Krishna. He was lamenting. He had no one to talk to because we were just a bunch of passionate, bewildered, frustrated, aspiring devotees. So I find, personally, when I go around the world and meet devotees, the problems that devotees are facing are on a very basic level. And it has a lot to do with just not following the basic standards, like 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles. So, let me put this one up too. Arjuna he's giving this argument of false compassion, and Krishna defeats him using his explanation of the identity of the soul. The soul is eternal, the soul can never be cut by any weapon, it can't be burned by fire, it can't be withered by the wind, it can't be wet by water, so you're not going to be killing anyone. And pretty much spiritual arguments. Now in this section, as I said, even in the last section, Krishna, from 11 through 26, he takes one particular line of argument, and then from 26 through to 30, he shifts a little bit. Now here, from 31 through 38, Krishna uses material arguments.